Welcome to the All About Alts podcast, where we explore the world of alternative investing to help you find financial independence. Join our host, Newview Trust's president, Jason DeBono, as he covers a variety of topics with different guest speakers to discuss tax and alternative investing strategies. It is never too late to start taking control of your financial future, and we are so excited for you to be joining us for this opportunity to hear from some of the best in the business.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the All About Alts podcast. I am your host, Jason DeBono, and we are joined today with our good friend from Austin, Texas, Mr. Josh Andrews of Paper Profits. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having us today.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously the name of your business, Paper Profits, some people are probably picking up that chances are this is some sort of note lending type discussion today, which our regular listeners know is near and dear to my heart. But, you know, Josh, let's start a little bit. Obviously, we're going to talk loans today. You know, you've been in the lending business a long time. Now you're running a lending fund. Let's start with a book. I think it's so cool when people not only write a book, but actually produce it. And a book that really does very well. It's on Amazon, has incredible reviews, really tells the story. But it's Paper Profits, How to Buy and Profit from Notes. What was kind of the, just talk to us a little bit about why the book what's the cliff notes on kind of why somebody should go out and grab it on Amazon?
Yeah. Well, thanks for asking about that. I authored that book in 2017, so a little while back. And my reasoning for that was really, as I was explaining to anywhere from, prospective investors, or even my family, like my mom would ask, you know, well, what is it you do? And it was kind of hard to distill that into something that made sense to the other party, right? If they had no idea of what notes or investing in mortgages or anything outside of having just a mortgage on your house, I was looking for a way to distill something into very easy to understand language that I could, you know, basically hand to her or anyone else and say, this is kind of, you know, the snapshot of what I'm talking about, what I do. And so that was kind of the premise of creating that. And then also using that as an education piece for anyone who's just interested, whether they want to do it themselves or whether they're looking for other help, just to kind of open that door for them. And I looked at a lot of other books that were similar. So there's a ton of books out there, you know, on this topic. And I wanted to make it personal enough to where readers could relate to my reasoning of, you know, why I got into this and why it's interesting to me. And then also where they could take something from it. So it was something educational. It's not salesy. It's, hey, you know, take what you want, leave what you want. But here's kind of, you know, the basic steps and what it looks like. So that was, you know, that was my reasoning for creating it. It was never supposed to sell a bunch. I still get some minor royalties from it, but it's not, you know, it's not paying your bills, but it's more or less a free handout, right? And we do that to all of the conventions and places we go. We actually do that. So I would like to offer that to any of your listeners that are interested. We do have a form on our website. You can order it and we'll actually ship a copy to you. Again, there's no advertising. There's nothing weird in it. It's just solid educational stuff.
Well, we'll definitely throw the link in the show notes for that. And I would encourage everyone, you know, we preach education. And when people are producing, you know, free resources, especially for those that like to read and kind of go through and really understand it that way, what a great offer. So thank you for that. You know, it's interesting that you kind of you mentioned like mom and other people saying like, what exactly do you do? And my sister is an attorney. You know, she's relatively intelligent, right? Certainly academically. And, you know, I've been in the alternative asset space for 19 years and she still jokes like, I don't actually know what you do, you know? And so it is, there are good resources and it sounds like, the Paper Profits book is exactly that. And, you know, notes seem so simple. It was the first investment I ever made, in my self-directed accounts, and I still continue to do notes in my accounts, my kids' accounts, et cetera. And, you know, I think people overly complicate notes, but I think sometimes we tend to underly simplify, right? And there's that little gap of, they're easy to follow and understand, but there's so many different types of notes and so many different ways to structure, which is great. Boy, it can feel like a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like real estate investing. When you say real estate, I'm a real estate investor. Well, there are so many like different avenues you can go down and drill down. Well, you know, do you invest in land? Do you invest in develop? Are you a developer? Are you, you know, do you do multifamily? Do you do office space? Like all these different things that you can sub niches of it. So it's difficult to kind of give someone a blanket answer that makes sense. It really just depends on how much they want to know, right? Like if they want to dig or someone's like, hey, well, what do you do? Oh, we're just investors. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a very, very good analogy. And it is, it's a lot like real estate. I think people think, you know, you buy real estate, you sell real estate, you buy real estate, you rent real estate. But yeah, there's so many ways and notes are no different. Now you started in the note industry as a loan officer, right? 2012, we've got this kind of economic uncertainty that's just around us. We're, you know, certainly up to our eyeballs in the Great Recession, right? Everything has bottomed out and everyone was trying to figure out what goes where and how the heck do we get out of this mess? How'd you get into that space and what did you learn at that time? Because I think, you know, one thing that a lot of investors, regardless of what they buy, you know, there's a lot of lessons to be learned in times of recession. And some of them are you learn the hard way. Some, thankfully, you learn by other people's experience. But, you know, tell us a little bit about that, because that's definitely an opportunity, really, that not everyone in this space has had.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I've made a lot of mistakes. So I have made investing mistakes. I have lost money before. So anybody that tells you that, you know, that's not possible or they haven't is not far enough along the track or lying. But that being said, at the time when I actually started to work for a couple loan origination shops, my goal at the time was, first, I wanted to understand more just about finances, right? That's always been an interesting thing to me. And then secondly, at that time, I needed a job, right? So that was obviously the motivation to show up and do everything. So while I was doing that, I got to like interface with people, with borrowers, potential borrowers. And at that time, it was really easy to do that job because I had actually entered and trained right when interest rates were like, I mean, they were super low. So the conversation was really, hey, you have a 7% interest rate on your house. We can give you like a no doc 3%, you know, it was like that. And so it was just kind of, you know, it was easy. And then as things progressed and interest rates changed and things kind of the dynamic changed, it really became more of a struggle, right? To kind of interface with people, have leads enough to where you're talking to the right folks, things like that. And for me, it was a great learning experience of seeing kind of internally what those lenders would go through and, you know, what they would say, not to the borrowers, but kind of in the background of what they're looking for and what they don't care about, things like that. So it's very educational. In the same respect, right when I was leaving those companies is where I actually learned about note investing in general, right? So I knew nothing about it prior to that. It was more or less, I'm just doing a job and it was interesting. It was around finance, it was around mortgages, but I didn't know anything about, you know, investing in mortgages, that you and I could do that with our IRAs, that there was money there. It didn't make a lot of sense to me because how could there be money when, you know, these banks are lending at 5%, 6%, you know, like how can you live on that? How can you grow wealth? Things like that. So it didn't really click for me till a little bit later.
Yeah. Well, you know, and experience in lending comes in a lot of different shapes and sizes. And, you know, being on the origination side and working as an officer and kind of maybe graduating, if that's a fair term to use, into different areas of the business, you started to get some exposure now into the private side and these private loans, and it's not so much a refinance. And I remember the first loan I did was 12-2 and, you know, 12% interest, 2 points. And I remember telling my dad, and my dad's like, why would anyone ever borrow money at that rate? You know, and you're like, well, they're buying something that can't get financed, and you explained it to him. And it was like, you know, and my dad's, you know, a smart guy and been self-employed and, you know, has been a real estate investor. So he's got all this experience, but he couldn't wrap his arms around the fact, because in his world, you know, he always got a traditional loan from the bank, and everything looked like his home loan on his primary residence. And so people starting to kind of learn and navigate this other space, and you realize that people will pay a lot of interest for short-term money or money that banks don't want to finance. So let's talk a little bit about that. How did you kind of see that, and what was your exposure like? And, you know, you're currently today, you know, managing a fund of private loans. And so kind of talk to us a little bit, maybe just about how that story kind of unfolded into you deciding to, hey, let me actually go be on the lending side of this transaction.
Yeah. So it was very similar to what you kind of described, where somebody else kind of opened my eyes to it. I was leaving the employment at the origination shop I was at, and I was having a call with a gentleman who's at the time was very wealthy. And my whole goal at that time was I wanted to buy investment property for rentals. And I had saved up some money, what I thought was a lot of money, which really wasn't. And I contacted him. I said, okay, so what's my next step? I've done all the reading, all the studying, whatever. And he started to steer me away, and he said, you should check out Notes. And I said, well, I don't understand what you're talking about, you know. So he gave me the Cliff Notes version, and I kind of dismissed him. I was like, well, let's stick on task with this real estate stuff. And he's like, you really should check this out. I think long term, it's a great tool for your retirement account. You could build this thing up to where it's like great, steady cash flow. So I dismissed him and just, you know, continued talking about the real estate stuff. And afterwards, I had some time to have that kind of sink in. And I thought about it and said, okay, well, I'm going to do some reading. I mean, he can't be totally wrong. The guy's pretty well off. And at the time, I didn't have any money. So I'm like, okay. So I did end up reading. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. Like, how is this, you know, possible? Because I've never heard it. Like you talked about, I've never heard that from anyone else. It's like this whole side world, right? And so I was really fortunate at the time where I was introduced to a mentor of mine, who I'm still very thankful for today. And at that time, this was probably around 2012, 2013, he was doing like non-performing loans. And he was doing even crazier sounding, he was doing non-performing junior liens on residential property. So, you know, it's a nice house, the senior's current, the junior lien was charged off, and you know, the bank had sold it. So these were originated from like a bank, credit union, sold. And he's like, yeah, you send me just entire tapes or, you know, basically spreadsheets of this stuff. And they had prices attached to them. And he's like, yeah, you can spend, you know, $6,000 here to buy, you know, this $50,000 worth of debt. And here's what you'll do to collect it. And, you know, I'll do it for you. You'll pay me and all that. So I was like, well, this sounds, you know, kind of weird. And so I put some money from my IRA into that, right? So I think I spent like 10 grand to do that from my IRA, and it worked out great. Like, it was phenomenal. We were buying these at 10 cents, you know, modifying and then selling them at 80. But that time, you know, it took me a little while to kind of get comfortable with that and figure out where the balance is between risk and reward. And again, I didn't have a lot of cash. So it was kind of piecemeal. And then the second thing I did was I actually bought with my IRA, I used the remaining $18,000 that was in it to buy a performing loan to see the difference between these two animals. And I love that. I was like, this is great, because I bought it at a discount, and it was like, you know, a discount for our listeners, meaning less than the borrower owed, right? So let's say the borrower owes 100 grand, you're paying 75 for it. So it's already originated, you're buying that, and that worked out great. I was like, okay, this is really cool. So I kept doing that, and I made some mistakes, lost money, made some money, and then started talking to my friends. You know, I had a really good buddy, still do at the time, that I grew up with, and he's like, well, what are you doing? I said, well, here's what we're doing, and like, it's doing great. And walked through the process with him, and then he started, you know, putting some money up, 15, 20 grand at a time, and testing it and doing all that. So that was kind of like how I started on the reverse end of like buying stuff that needed some polish. And so starting that way was really good for me, because now when you get far enough down the track and you've done hundreds of those, you're not afraid of, you know, a default. You know 18 ways to handle that. You know all of the legalities. You know all of the things that can come up because you've seen them. And it's much more not scary, right? So that was really a benefit to me starting out. And, you know, of course, we've kind of graduated now with what we focus on, which is just people that invest for retirement, for cash flow. And so we focus on performing loans now. So we don't do non-performing stuff anymore. But having that education and coming forward with that was just like so fortunate for me to be able to do that. And it was really exciting to do it. And there was a lot of money to be made in that as well. And so as I was doing that more and more and having friends and family, then the next step was, okay, so how can I build this into, you know, a business where my partner and I, and we have staff now and all of that to really make this something of value to others, you know, and of course make money as well for management. So yeah, it was a real interesting kind of, that's kind of a condensed snapshot, but that's really how I got started, you know, and then over time you see enough things happen with the loans and you're buying and selling and things. And so it gives you a lot more of comfort with that asset class. We also do a lot of originations now too. So we actually originate loans, but I didn't start that way. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think you've hit on a couple things and maybe we can pull a few pieces out and talk a little bit about them. You know, one is, and maybe we'll work backwards to forward is, you know, origination is what we're all familiar with, right? That one's, when I say straightforward, it means that you wrote the loan, you looked at the deal. But let's talk about buying notes, you know, and the secondary market. And I think that's an area that most people really don't think much about. And they kind of think, well, why would someone sell the note, right? And so let's maybe start there. And then let's talk a little bit about non-performing notes and why, you know, those are sold at a discount. But let's just talk about that. So let's just say, Josh, I'm a lender, right? I wrote you a $100,000 loan. And at whatever it is, we'll call it 7% interest. It really doesn't matter. Why down the road, right, the day after I wrote the loan or a year or 2 years, why would I sell that to you and even sell it at a discount?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that. There are some shops that will originate and sell right away. You know, they'll use a credit line or a warehouse line and they're just collecting points. So if they do it right then, they made the loan yesterday and they're selling it today. They're just collecting, you know, a couple points and moving on. So it's high volume for them. Typically with, you know, guys like you and I and the folks that are listening to this, where they're buying loans that are already created, pre-originated on the secondary market, you're dealing with maybe loans that if they were originated by a bank or like an actual large company, those may have defaulted at some point. And then now they're performing. So they've got a new modification and the borrower's on track and they have a good pay history and they have a lot of equity. Equity is obviously very important to protect the investment. Another scenario could be maybe an entity or an individual, you know, a wealthy person has originated a loan that's longer term than they'd like. They thought it was great and they're in it and they've, you know, a 10-year loan or 15-year loan and they've collected maybe points on the origination or whatever, and then they've collected, you know, the first 5 years of payments. Well, as you're looking at the amortization schedule on these, you know, the first 5 years is pretty much interest. So the unpaid balance or what the borrower owes stays the same. And so they can collect a large period of time where they're recovering money and making profit and then sell, you know, close to par or maybe at a slight discount and still make a lot of money. And I actually had, when I first started investing, I had a performing loan that I purchased. It was actually off of FCI Lender Services, a servicer. It used to have like a portal where they could trade loans and it was really easy and that no longer exists. But I bought a senior lien on there. It was a small first position lien on like a property in Ohio, I think. Very clean, like picket fence, the whole nine yards, a small property. And I couldn't figure out why they were selling it like at that price because the borrower owed, I think he had close to 7% rate and the borrower owed like 80 or 90,000. And we struck a deal where I bought it for $41,000, I think. So almost, you know, almost a 50% discount. So I was trying to figure out like how did they make money on this? And like what kind of raw deal am I getting that I just don't see? Because that's, you know, when you look at stuff like that, my antenna always goes up, like, what am I not seeing? What it turned out to be after I dug pretty deeply into it and the pay history and all of that, they had held this loan for like 8 years. And so they had already collected like an like 40 grand on this loan, right? Plus some other stuff in the background. And they had actually bought it from somebody who had originated it. So it's a third hand down kind of thing, you know? So somebody originated it, they owned it, held it for a period of time and sold it to me. So I'm like, these people have already made plenty of money, right? Like they're not really that concerned. They just wanted the cash released so they could go invest in another property or do whatever they wanted to do. So there's a lot of like tweaking that can go on. If somebody looks at the actual numbers, you can get really creative completely legally and say, hey, this is why, you know, they're still coming out ahead, but I'm still getting a great deal buying it. But usually the reason they'll sell is they want the money, right? They need the cash for some event. Not our business to care about what that event is. It's our business to really just dig down deep in the due diligence and figure out, you know, what are we missing? Is this actually, does this fit, you know, our safety box? And what are we missing with the due diligence to make sure that's correct? But yeah, I mean, it's a really crazy, it's very hard to explain until you actually see like the numbers, you know, like the, I wouldn't say spreadsheets, but maybe just the amortization schedule and what they bought it for and so forth. It really makes a lot more sense. It's kind of, it's not on the surface. It's not apparent who's winning, right?
Well, that's one beauty of loans. It's kind of like real estate. You know, it's not one person makes money. You know, one person can make money off their purpose of the home and they sell it to the next person who makes money off their purpose of the home and the next person and so on. And, you know, going back to your, they usually, you know, it usually is a money need. And it doesn't mean it's a bad thing. They're not selling it because they're broke. They may be selling it because they just want the cash out of it. I've got a good friend, an investor that I probably bought 6 or 8 notes from over the last 10 years. And they always come the same way. You know, he as a investor, he never likes cash sitting on the sidelines. So he usually would, you know, put it into a loan while he was looking for more properties and eventually a killer deal or he was doing a rehab. He didn't want, and he would call and say, hey, you know, I've got this loan. I need the cash out of it. Do you want it? And it was a great deal for me because he had already done the underwriting. They usually had a year or so of track record, so I could see that they were making payments. You know, I could get a better assessment of the value of the property today versus when it was underwritten. And so it was great. And but it was always the same thing. It was whenever a better deal came around for the cash, he would sell the notes. And if not, they were great notes. He'd hold them. And so. It's a killer little business to get into. And for me, and I'm in a much more passive role than certainly you are in on the origination side. But I think from a list, you know, for our listeners, the thing that I've always appreciated about notes that's really easy to understand, you know, that I've always tried to look at is if you really think about a note, right, does the rate match the risk, right? Whatever the risk profile is. And then does the collateral feel comfortable to protect the downside? And if you think about it, there's no other investment, right? You can't buy a stock and go, does the collateral of this stock, you know, support the downside? The answer is no, there is no downside protection yet in a loan. So, you know, I've always felt like it was a very, while it can be super complex, it was a very easy business to understand. And I could see, okay, this is a $50,000 loan on a $100,000 property paying 8% per, you know, per year. Yeah, I can wrap my arms around that. I don't need a whole lot of exercise or due diligence. So let's just quickly touch on non-performing notes and then we're going to shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about kind of what you're doing today and kind of the underwriting and due diligence process, because I think that's important for our listeners to understand the mechanics. But quick primer on non-performing notes. I mean, obviously, it's not performing. If it's not performing, a lot of people would think, well, it's bad, right? Just give us maybe the quick kind of understanding of why there are non-performing notes that aren't bad and how they're monetized on the secondary market.
Sure. Yeah. So the non-performing part is, you know, we talk about notes and mortgages. Those are obviously two pieces of the same thing. So the mortgage is a security instrument that's securing our investment, and then the notes like the IOU. So I usually just say note investing or note mortgage investing, but they're kind of the same thing. And so the when something's non-performing, it just means that for whatever reason, the borrower is not holding up their end of the obligations. It's not paying. So you've got the performing where, of course, everything's as agreed. We're paying our mortgage. Everything's fine. Then you have like a delinquency where delinquency would be maybe 30, 60, 90 days late. You can't really like go after that borrower legally to start any kind of collections or foreclosures typically. But they're still like not current. And then you have defaulted or non-performing. So that's past maybe that 90 or 120 day mark where now you actually can, you know, they're just not paying flat out. And now you actually can start a foreclosure or you can start some legal collections to protect your investment capital. But, you know, non-performing, it's definitely not a place to start. I think you'd agree with that. There's, you know, especially if this is retirement money, if it's just play money and you're like, hey, I've got this money and I'm okay with like having problems or working through issues, that's totally cool. But if this is like investment for retirement, I think that should be looked at a different lens. And that should be more, how can I get a steady rate of return with my investment securitized by real estate, right? So there's a happy medium there with risk reward, like you said. And how I started, like I mentioned, was non-performing stuff. So we have a lot of, I've seen all kinds of things with that. And it was in junior too. So there's, you know, worrying about the senior and all kinds of things. But the non-performing can be very lucrative. What I would say in today's environment, what we're seeing is if you're going to buy something that's already non-performing, so you haven't originated it, but you've got where you're buying it on the secondary market, it's non-performing, you're going to rehab it or whatever. The pricing isn't really great right now. Years ago it was. It's too expensive. There's a lot of issues with certain states now getting involved, right? Because you have to remember these are people typically living in their homes. So we're not talking about bridge lending, but just this would be on single family properties that are owner occupied. There's a lot of stuff you have to be careful with. And so you can't just, you know, kick people out on the street. That doesn't work. And that's never been our model. I don't think that's most lenders' model. Most lenders just want to be paid. They want consistent income. There's never been a time where we have purchased a loan or I've purchased a loan and said, oh, I just can't wait for them to stop paying so I could take their house. Like that's never, ever entered into the equation ever. We've done absolutely everything we can to work with them, right? Like if they stop paying, like, hey, what's going on? You know, can we modify it? What's changed? So it's not a predatory type of approach or mindset. It's obviously you have a business to run. So people can't live for free if they owe you money. But on that same term, you have to think about, you know, this is a family. This is someone with kids and maybe they lost their job. You know, like there's some things to consider. But typically, I mean, there's nothing to be afraid of with non-performing loans. I would say go in very slowly, go in with money that you're prepared to risk and make small bets. So, you know, a bet is any investment's really some sort of bet. I mean, you're doing your due diligence and then you're thinking about what could go wrong in the future. So, and you've got these choices and then you have just kind of randomness that can happen, just life, you know, Murphy's Law stuff. And so with the non-performing stuff, I have some friends that do a lot. We don't do that anymore because we've really shifted, like I said, our focus just to serving retirement-minded individuals. And that really doesn't fit into their bucket. But the performing loans and originating loans and all of that is really where a lot of the steady, you know, kind of sameness, even though it's boring, is where you can start planning for retirement and say, hey, I can calculate if I'm receiving this every month, right, more or less for the next 2 years, here's where I'll be. So I need to kind of move things around and you can plan for that. Whereas with non-performing, it's much harder. Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more on the don't start with non-performing loans, right? Yes. and you know, I think you highlighted something that's really indicative of just market conditions. I mean, you know, there are times where non-performing notes are a really good value and opportunity, and there's times where they're not. There's times where, you know, being the originator, you know, has, you know, rates go up, rates go down. So there's some moving parts there, all certainly things to be considered. We're going to do this, Josh. We're going to throw you on the hot seat for our quirky questions of the day. We're going to take a quick pause here, and then we're going to redial this conversation back up. And let's talk a little bit about kind of the true origination side. Let's talk about rates and what that's looked like. Certainly been a little bit of a seesaw over the last few years, and then a rocket ship, right, which we're just starting to kind of compress from. So a lot going on. A lot to talk about. Want to pick your brain. But yeah, let's get to these quirky questions here. Amy's got the envelopes. I'm going to
lay it on me
today.
Who came up with these questions? You guys did, or are these listeners?
These are all listeners submitted. Okay. Thank you for the reminder. Okay. If you do want to submit them, the email is allaboutalts@newviewtrust.com. But these are always fun. I don't actually see these until I pull them out of the envelope. So it's just as much fun for me. So Josh, you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Question number one. If you had to be haunted by a ghost, which historical figure would you want it to be?
I think I'd be interested in talking to Nikola Tesla.
Interesting.
He was a little out there, but he had some really cool stuff.
All right. So the ghost of Tesla past.
Yes.
Okay. I like it. Home cooked meal or eating at a restaurant?
Either or. I eat very strange. So my wife doesn't cook a lot. She's a great cook. But trying to keep up with like what I'm eating that week is difficult for her. So I would say maybe eating at a restaurant would be, yeah, a nice one.
Okay. Well, I think I'm probably with you. I actually like both. You know, there's pros and cons, I suppose, to both. But sounds like we're going to a restaurant if push came to shove.
Depends on the occasion, I guess. What mood am I in and what occasion? Yeah,
it is. It's work to get up and get out of the house. It sounds easy, but it is work. All right. Question number three. If you could be any age for a week, what age are you going to?
I would say I felt physically, I mean, I feel great now. I felt physically the best probably in my mid-20s. So maybe 28 to 30. Yeah. I would stay that way for the rest of my life. Yeah.
Now there's, you know, age is one of those things when you talk to people about, there's so many great periods of age, you know, and they're all different, but all fun. I think I'm going back to like 20. And I only say that because, you know, there's a very short window in our lives where we have full freedom, you know, and that's that kind of college time. But we also really don't have responsibility. You know, it's kind of a very nice, you know, thing. I remember getting out of college and realizing I actually had way more free time when I graduated college, even though I was working full time, you know, than I did in college. It's a weird, you know, how it kind of works. But that was a fun time. But I think the 20s, 20s were great. Really, the 20s are a good time in our lives. That's for sure.
Just before life sets in, the responsibilities, like you said, you know, you don't realize it and then it creeps up on us.
It does. Yeah. You get away with a lot of stuff in your 20s, 30s and 40s, a little bit harder to get away with it. But I guess that's how life works. So, well, Josh, you are officially off of the hot seat.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, those were easy.
Yeah. You got a good batch this week. They took it easy on you, although some of them sometimes can, they can be a little tricky, but you survived it. And now we get to pick your brain a little bit more as we kind of wrap things up here on the actual lending side. So, you know, Paper Profits as a business is a lending mechanism. You run a fund for accredited investors. You know, you've highlighted that most of those investors are the lion's share, usually are retirement-based investors, you know, that have a longer time horizon investing for IRAs. And certainly, you know, the goal today is not necessarily to plug the fund, but, you know, managing a fund is not easy, right? Starting a fund, raising capital, managing it. I mean, you have a series of, when I say challenges, they're not challenges in a bad way, but for most people in running a business, you've got a lot of different things that you're overseeing, right? So you're creating your own product as opposed to some places that are just selling an existing product, right? So you got the product side, but then you've got the servicing side and the capital raising side. How do you manage all of that, you know, and what prompted you to kind of take that step from helping your friends and family enter into the private lending market to really total strangers now being able to go and commit to be part of your fund?
Sure. So obviously there is a lot to it. It's not a passive or side project. I mean, it's a full-time job for us. And it's not just me. I have a partner who's a CPA. Her name is Jane Wobbs. And we have staff, right? Full-time staff. And so it's not something to be taken lightly. The reason, obviously, that I kind of expanded and we continue to expand is probably just like any other business, right? You kind of grow or you die. And then also there's a profit incentive for any business, right? Whether you even work for someone else, that's why you show up, is you have bills to pay, you want to make a profit, you have your own goals that require financing or money. But that in and of itself is not enough. There needs to be a strong desire to serve whoever your clients or your customers are. And for us, our customers really are the investors. So they're not the borrowers themselves, although the borrowers are very important. The real focus is the investors and what they want and what they think is important. Obviously, we have to temper that with what's out there in the marketplace and what's possible and management and expenses and all of that. So there is a lot there. And I would say the key components to our business right now as of today is you have loan origination, right? So that's connecting with borrowers and actually going through that process. And then you have servicing, which we use an outside third party. We actually use FCI, Lender Services, for a lot of our stuff, which is phenomenal. And then we use, then you have capital raising, right? Which is, again, a full-time job, which is really just educating. It's not selling anything to anyone. It's just educating on a different way to take advantage of an investment vehicle, right? And then you have due diligence, of course, which kind of fits into that, which is a really key piece, making sure that your investments are sound, that you're going through that process. You're not just lending to everyone. You're evaluating your portfolio on a regular basis. You're culling out stuff that's not a good fit risk profile wise. And then you have accounting, you know, tax return, CPA, all of that stuff, investor communication, which is super important. I think that's one thing that we're extremely good at is communicating with our investors. And we've really made that a focus because, again, they're our customers. And so having that open line of communication is so they know what's going on, right? What's in the portfolio, what's happening, what's good, what's bad, and then calling out bad stuff when you see it. I think it's key because not everything is great all the time. And we just know this intuitively in life. But in general, I think that the idea of investing in notes is really to hedge risk because you have real estate as the collateral, but you also have a lot of things that you stack in your favor as a lender. So there's a ton of things you can do to really make it, okay, well, if things really go south, we're not going to lose everything. Like it might slow down the payments to us, but we're not going to lose everything. And there's, like you said, it's really hard to find that kind of consistency in income for retirement and that security component, which is why, of course, we're jazzed about notes. And the origination side, what I'll say to that is the origination is really important in today's market. And the reason for that is as interest rates play around, so that let's say they fluctuate and go up, so you're not stuck with a bunch of loans that are paying 7%, right? You can actually originate stuff, maybe bridge type loans, which we're doing quite a bit more, 12, 24, 36 months, very high rate. And so you can kind of lever those into your portfolio to where it doesn't matter what rates the Fed does with rates. Your portfolio for your investors are always competitive, or for yourself if you're investing in your IRA. I think that's a key piece, a key dial that we have as investors. You know, so I'm a big fan of the shorter term, higher rate lending, provided that the security is there. which is, I'm sure, very much what you're doing and what you're used to.
It is amazing, you know, and you kind of hit it as well. And I want to repeat it for those listening. You know, there's just very few investments that can provide a fixed or predetermined rate of return, certainly not guaranteed, nothing in this life is, but also has that underlying collateral. And, you know, one of my favorite Warren Buffett quotes is return of principal is always better than return on principal. And, you know, in our world, I mean, we see, you know, we custody $2.5 billion of investments, 19 years of seeing clients direct really everything under the sun. We see a lot of loans, but we see everything you can imagine. And, you know, it amazes me. And, you know, I'm not an investor and I don't do due diligence on their, you know, investments. That's the beauty of a self-directed account. But it is amazing how many people it just, you feel a little bit like they're just chasing a return. And, you know, what's great about private lending is you really can do both. You mentioned rates. Let's talk a little bit about that. You know, what, obviously it's been a totally weird rate environment, right? It's hard to figure it out. I think everybody, unless you've been living under a rock for the last, you know, 18 months, is well aware that the Fed has skyrocketed rates at the fastest rate in history. And now they, you know, we just got the latest update last week that they're still anticipating 3 rate cuts in 2024, which means somewhere over the next, wherever we are, 9 months or so, we're going to see 3 rate cuts, which could be, you know, 25 basis points or could be larger. What does that do in your business? Let's talk about both, you know, current origination. Let's talk about the book that you currently have. How does it impact then? And then looking out at the future, you know, how does it change the way that you run the business or the fund going forward?
That's a really important question because we actually do a lot of thinking on this topic. And we also get a lot of questions from our current investors, right? Like, hey, how does this affect the security of the portfolio, or how does this affect, you know, things going forward? What I would say that the short answer, the simple answer to it is, so loans that are pre-existing, long-term loans. So these would be like a loan that a mortgage you might have on your house, or maybe I have on my house, a 20-year fixed or a 30-year fixed, something like that. When rates go up, the value of that asset goes down. So when Fed rates go up, the value of that asset goes down. Nothing changes with the payments, of course. What changes is if you need to have a liquidation event where you need to go sell that, it's likely that now investors, because the rates are higher, it's going to affect their view of purchasing that. So they're going to pay less for that. You're going to take more of a discount and you may not get the money you want. Doesn't put you in a terrible position, but that's the kind of the relationship. So if rates go down, let's say they go back to 3%, well, now that loan's looking really good and we might be able to sell that for par, which is almost close to, you know, the full amount that's owed on the unpaid balance. So that's kind of the relationship with longer term debt. With shorter term debt, like you've talked about and that what we're doing, is that actually doesn't matter so much because you're in such a short period of time. You know, you're in that 12 to maybe, let's say, 36 months on the high end. So you're going to make that loan, collect interest over that time, and then exit. And through some payoff or some kind of event from the borrower. And with that short of a time frame, it doesn't matter if rates are going to go high because you're already charging a high rate. You're already charging, you know, this isn't a 5 or 6%. You're charging 12, 15, 18, 20 points or 20%, right? And the way, like you had mentioned earlier in our conversation, the way the borrower can justify that is they don't have this for 30 years. This might be on like a fix and flip, or this might be on a commercial property where plenty of equity, plenty of everything, but they just need that for this period of time. And so they're fine paying 20%, right? Because it's doing them a favor. You're there for them and you're reliable. And, you know, they're not having to be saddled with this long-term because they're making well enough money in that transaction. They just need the money to do this. So that's kind of a different mindset between having a fixed loan that's something that you and I might have on a personal residence, where if you have a whole portfolio of just that, as rates go up, the value of that portfolio, if you had to liquidate it, would go down. So it's important to have kind of a balance, I think, where you do have maybe some long-term debt, but you also have these levers or these shorter-term high rate, where it doesn't matter if rates go up to 20% because we're already charging that. You know, so it's like, so it's an interesting thing. I mean, it's definitely a numbers thing. It takes a little while to kind of wrap our head around it, but that's how, at least for us, it would affect our portfolio. And we're doing a lot more originations, and you know, we're always culling out loans that we think aren't a long-term fit. They're still producing income, but we're like, hey, we're going to trend this way a little bit more. So we're constantly in that process. And I think a lot of other companies are too, but it's a good way to go with the shorter term. Yeah. Relative to the interest rate hikes, because we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. We all certainly, if we had that crystal ball, I don't think any of us would actually look into it. We'd probably be a little bit too scared. I know I certainly would, but you know, you bring up some other great points for people to kind of think about loans. And you know, there's a level of diversity in loans, and you're kind of referencing, you can really diversify, you know, these different timeframes on these loans. And as a result, you're actually almost hedging, right, the industry. And not to say you can't do that in real estate. Certainly you can buy real estate with a short-term strategy or with a long-term strategy, but the exit is usually contingent on market, right? Whereas when you originate a loan, while there's market conditions, we've already agreed day one, Josh, you will pay me back in 12 months, right? There is no ambiguity around the tenure of this loan. And so being able to stagger, you know, these investments over periods of time and alter the length of these loans, whether it's take advantage of long-term opportunities when they present themselves, take advantage of short-term opportunities when they present themselves, or a good hybrid of everything in between is a pretty cool way to go. From a lending standpoint and from a fund side, you know, as originators, I think one thing that is always so cool about loans is a lot of times people think that, you know, if you write a loan, you got to wait to get paid back. And the reality is, yes, you do have to wait to get paid back, or you can sell it to someone else that's willing to wait to get paid back. And so, you know, you've got a lot of flexibility. So as you know, these key economic events that are outside of our span of control are happening around us, you guys are able to pivot and take action based on what makes the most sense.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think that one of the things that I'm always thinking about is how do we put ourselves in a good position? And so a good position is really no matter what happens within reason outside of, you know, the economy or our job market or whatever, are we putting ourselves in a good position to where it's recoverable and we have options, we have choices? Right? Where if we're doing something because we have to, or it's really time-based, or we're backing or kind of painting ourselves into a corner, that's where you only need one. There's only one option, and that's the good option, right? Where if you put yourself in a good position with what we're talking about, having diversity, diversifying across different time frames and layering that in the portfolio, different properties, different locations, states, whatever, that puts you in a much better position where, you don't have to do anything, right? Your option could be, I'm not doing anything and we're still fine, right? You're not being forced into stuff. So I really love notes. I think they're of course not, I will preface it with, they're not the end all be all, right? So I don't think any investment is. I think that any prudent investor, especially with retirement funds, needs to have a diversified portfolio. So I'm not suggesting every dollar should be in notes. What I am suggesting is I think it's a great thing to look at for very steady, very secure income that's geared towards retirement, right? So those things of having more passive freedom to do what we want with our lives, which is really the, I think, kind of the whole idea around retirement, right? Is to do things on our terms and when we would like to do them, spend time with family, spend time with the things that we enjoy. And I know that's why I started becoming an investor. That's the reason. It wasn't to get, you know, a sports car. It was to have security for my wife and to be able to spend more time with my family. And I think that's a lot of, or should be a lot of investors' aim, you know, from the retirement standpoint.
Yeah, without question, you know, you're highlighting a lot of the intangibles of investing, right? I think they're there are a lot of people that see investments as a means to a sports car. And look, if that's, you know, of importance for people, it's great. We all need some form of motivation. But I think what people, you know, we really try to kind of help get out there is like financial freedom is exactly that. It's freedom. And, you know, it's just being comfortable. And if you want to go out to dinner, you go out to dinner. And if you want to go on a trip, you go on a trip. And it doesn't mean everyone's aspirations are different. And the type of trip you may go on may differ completely from the type of trip I go on, both in geographics and cost and you know, the luxurious nature of the travel, which is great. But what doesn't change is the fact that hopefully, right, we're all working to get to that point where that the freedom of the decision is universal, which is, yes, let's do it. And let's figure out the what after we've made that decision.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a big thing. And I think a lot of people deep down want that. It's just, how do I bridge that gap, you know, from my day job, or am I going to be young enough to, you know, do that? But it's, I think it's a universal experience.
Absolutely. And it takes good savings. It takes good investing. And those are disciplines. You know, I couldn't agree more on that. Everybody should be in notes. You know, I'm not here to tell people what to do with their money. I don't think you are either, but I think our consensus is a fair one. And I think it's something everybody should hear, which is everybody should have some portion of their investable assets and using debt as a tool, an instrument, because it's a good one. And it offers a lot of things worth, you know, taking a look at. So, you know, we talk a lot of, about a lot of different investment strategies. We love them all in different ways. You know, they all probably have a piece in the portfolio somewhere. But at some point, right, you can't do 20 different things with your money. You got to figure out two or three or four or five. But certainly we, you know, I love lending. I've been doing it for almost 17 years in a variety of capacities. Obviously, Josh has so much more experience in the lending side, having made it his actual business and his business of helping others. So, Josh, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. And don't forget, make sure you click into the show notes. Don't forget to take advantage of the Paper Profits book. It's going to give you just a good understanding of what the private lending world is like and how it operates. And Josh is doing that as a courtesy. So thank you very much for doing that.
For sure. Yeah. Thank you for having us on. And I will say we are revamping our website, so it's a little bit outdated. We're upgrading it. Should be upgraded in a week or so.
Wonderful.
You know, but yeah, definitely go check out the book if you like it. It's completely free. It's a physical book. We'll ship it to you, and then feel free to reach out if you do have any questions. I'm more than happy to talk with anybody.
Well, we appreciate that. We love having experts on the show, and we love having people that that can talk intelligently about different things. And certainly today was a great episode. I think there's a lot to be had and a lot of opportunity on that lending side. Now, before we let you go completely, Josh, we wrap all of our season two guests up with the same question. So, Josh, what's keeping you up at night these days?
I mean, I sleep pretty good. Sleep is a big deal for me. But things that are always in the back of the mind are, you know, because we are investing with retirement funds. Right, I view this as a big responsibility for our company, and so I'm always asking the question: are we making the right decisions with this money? We have, you know, I have some of my family's money in it. I have aunts and uncles and things like that, you know, and so as well as friends, good friends, and so I think the biggest thing for me is really just constantly evaluating, are we doing the right thing, right? Because it is a responsibility. So I would say that's probably the biggest thing that would be on my mind. I'm not typically a worrier. That's something that I'm constantly coming back to.
Yeah, well, when you're a steward of other people's, you know, funds and hard-earned money, I can see how that, while it may not feel worrisome, I can still, you know, see how that could keep you up at night.
Sure.
Josh, absolutely loved having you on the show. Thanks for your wisdom as always. Best of luck as you continue to grow and expand Paper Profits and keep introducing people to the world of private lending. We've enjoyed our time working together and look forward to much more of it here in the future.
Perfect. Thank you, Jason. I appreciate it. It was nice talking with you today.
Hey, good to have you as well. Take it easy, Josh. Okay. And everybody else, thanks again for tuning in to the All About Alts podcast. Hit the like, share, subscribe button. Leave us that 5-star review. We love having you, and we'll look forward to seeing you guys next week.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope the information within this podcast has given you the tools that you need to find your way to financial independence. We would love to partner with you on this journey. Text ALTS, that's ALTS, to 407-708-1853 to learn more about how to get started today. Don't forget to follow us to make sure you don't miss a second of content, and we'll see you next week.